Blog Talk Radio
presents a Blog Radio Show.
Welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and I thank you so much for joining me tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show the other night with Martha Bolton, and we talked about her book, Bob Hope's Correspondence with GIs from World War II. Very fascinating book. You should check it out, and I'm sure there's more to come because Bob did he was there for every while he could do it. He did it for even if there wasn't a war going on. He was there in peace times, wartime. He was there. He's Mr. USO. So check the book out and go to Martha Bolton's website as well, MarthaBolton.com, and the book is of course available everywhere. So here we are, 1 week before Thanksgiving, guys. So hope you're all ready. And tonight we've got a great show, a guest that we've had on before, and I can't wait to talk to him and get caught up and see what's been going on since we last spoke. Larry is not only an author and a teacher, but he is the son of the infamous Charlotte Ray from The Facts of Life. So welcome, everybody, to the show. Larry Strauss. Larry, welcome to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's great to be with you again.
Yes, how you been? Everything good? What's going on since we last spoke?
Everything's great. It's still kind of, things are kind of, crazy, hectic, but good.
Good. I think the last time we talked, it was like early pandemic or just starting, and you were talking about the kids, trying to remember our conversation. I'm sorry. It was a long time ago.
We were trying to do that distance learning disaster. Most of us worked really hard to make the best of it, but it's no replacement for teaching in a classroom. And now I'm trying to yell through a mask, but the kids are understanding, and I'm a little hard of hearing, so it's but they're so patient with me when I ask them to repeat themselves, because I can't see them talking. Kids are quiet to begin with, and then
what kids do you know that are quiet? Come on.
Oh my god, no, they're at home, they may be loud, but when you're, when you're discussing Shakespeare or something, they get real quiet. They don't project their voices, most of them.
Yeah, no, I was talking in general that kids aren't quiet, but you're right. If you're in the middle of
not like little kids, right? Teenagers get self-conscious and they get, they get very quiet. It's hard to hear them. So anyway, and now I just spent. Last night I talked to two parents. Our school district has a vaccine mandate. That about, 5 to 7% of the teachers are gone because they did not comply. So it's all these administrators and district officials are having to go teach temporarily. There was already a teacher shortage, and then it just got much, much worse as a result of that. And then bus drivers, same thing. So now, they had to cancel night football games or reschedule them. And now in January, it'll be the students. And, you know, so we're trying. Our school is actually doing really well. We only have about 50 out of about 400 students who have not uploaded, you know, have not gotten vaccinated, uploaded their information. And so I spoke to a few parents, you know, of kids who really want to be able to stay at the school, and the parents are objecting. And, you know, I've sort of took a chance, you know, sticking my nose in, you know, a family's business.
Of course.
But, you know, but I think, you know, I was very respectful and, you know, basically told them, look, I love your kid. I don't want to see him go. And,
right.
You know, it's hard to get mad at somebody who says that. So,
right.
I know I was persuasive with one mother, and, you know, and these are people who it's not political for them. It's they're just worried. They're not. And I sympathize because, you know, the distrust of authorities and the government is not unjustified.
Right.
I mean, it may be wrong in this case, but it's not unjustified. And, you know, and nor even the distrust of schools and the anger at schools that, you know, we're hearing about people going to school board meetings in parts of the country and yelling and threatening. I mean, those things are terrible, but unfortunately, you know, we haven't always done a good job at schools of welcoming parents, of making parents feel heard, of, you know, being reasonable and fair to everyone. Like, you know, and that comes back to haunt you. And I think the government, I mean, we know going back to, I mean, probably forever, you know, people in power have abused their power and not been transparent. And, I mean, you know, you can go back at least to World War One. You know, and, you know, certainly Vietnam was, you know, there's some, you know, the secret bombings, you know, you add all that stuff up, and then why does it surprise you that people, and, you know, particularly marginalized people, you know, people of color, poor people, to have a distrust is understandable. So,
if I remember correctly, you teach in an inner city school too, right?
Yeah, I do. I do, and a lot of my students are, you know, their parents were mistreated in schools. They were tracked into vocational, non-academic, you know, or their grandparents. I guess I forget how old I am sometimes.
Mm.
Their parents are the age of my students I taught when I started teaching.
Wow!
But even then, there was segregation. There was. There's a lot of reasons for distrust, and
yeah.
So, you know, but
well,
unfortunately, that becomes a new kind of oppression.
If you can't trust the government,
speak to your
doctor.
Right, exactly, and
that's all.
You know, but I mean, when you're poor, you don't have a doctor. You have a machine that you. You don't have a one person who you know you can trust. And so,
right.
I mean, I don't even have a doctor, and I have an HMO and I see whoever's available, and I do trust them. I love them. They're mostly young doctors and, you know, interns and stuff, but, you know, I don't have somebody who, you know, who knows me and who I've had a relationship with as my doctor for years. You know, that's a thing. I remember my mother, I always thought, like, how does that? Like, my mother always had that until the end. She had, you know, doctors who, you know, she had their home phone numbers and, you know, and all that stuff.
Well,
it's very different. It's like an era ended, you know, to
right.
me.
I've had the same doctor for 30 years.
Right. Yeah. No, that's the way it is for a lot of people. But I think increasingly, for a lot
of us, that's
not,
declining.
You know,
yeah, it's declining.
Like
it is declining.
Yeah.
Right. It is declining.
My mother's doctor went to my mother's doctor went to see her at home when she was dying. I mean, and he hadn't treated her for, you know, for a while. He called me. He's like, I want to go see her. I mean, it was, they were friends. It was, you know, I can't imagine that happening to me. You know, they're very nice, but there's no, you know, there isn't that feeling of attachment.
I remember when I was a kid, our family doctor would make house calls.
I remember too, as when I was a kid, I tell that to my students, and it just seems like I must be having an episode of dementia or something.
Right.
What? A doctor went to your house? But of course it makes sense. Like, why would we want sick people out? It's so much more sensible. But, you know, the medical establishment does not, it just doesn't work. Now everything's computerized and machines. You know, you couldn't do it anyway.
One thing I did enjoy from the pandemic is the tele doctor visits, which is great. I love those.
Yeah, which they still. Yeah, now I had one of those. You know, I had a follow up appointment. He didn't need to look at anything. I just needed to talk to him. So yeah, there's actually been a lot of you know, sort of positive developments from the pandemic. More people able to work at home because they realize, of course, not me. I don't want to do my job from home. But
you can't. Your job is different. Your job is different.
Of course. But meetings. We can do those from home, and that's
right.
You know, so much.
That's all I do.
That's
all I do is meeting after meeting after meeting.
I mean, it's dreary. It's dreary. It is nicer to do meetings in person, but like I live in LA and I'm involved in athletic administration.
Yeah.
I run a couple of leagues here. And for me, the athletic directors who I have to meet with, they're coming from all different parts of the city. And it's just crazy. You know, for them to come after 3 o'clock to meet somewhere it's so much better to be able to do it. You know, on a computer from where you are, or you know, get in the car and start your commute home and have the meeting. So that has been a real positive development.
Refresh my memory, Larry. What are you teaching in school? Because I remember, I think we touched on that call that I think whatever you're doing, you got it from your mom.
Well, actually, I teach English, and
you're caring for the kids.
In some ways, yeah. Well, but I'll say before I even get to that, I mean, I teach literature. I teach advanced placement literature to seniors, high school seniors, and you know, we read novels, read short stories, poems, but we also read plays. Right now, we're reading The Glass Menagerie, and you know, when we discuss character and motive and stuff, I mean, that's. You know, I mean, I learned a lot of that from my mother, too, not, you know, from her directly.
Right.
And also, you know, just the exposure that, you know, that I had to playwrights and plays and, you know. So, I mean, you know, so my background, you know, definitely helps in that regard. And then, you know, certainly my mother, the thing I think both my parents really gave me, the greatest gift they gave me as a teacher is never to give up on anybody. And I learned that because I had a developmentally disabled brother who my parents were told to give up on. You know, back in the 1950s, doctors advised parents to just basically discard children like my brother. The great playwright, one of my idols, Arthur Miller, sadly had a son who was institutionalized his whole life and was not, you know, really in the family life. And that was typical. That's what people did. That was acceptable, and you were encouraged to do it. And my parents were an exception, and they refused to do it. And even, you know, and they never gave up on him, no matter how it seemed like he was never going to get better. And then he really never did get better, except that his life got better. Like,
right.
We were able to give him a better life. And that was, And they never gave up on him, and that, you know, and maybe there was small growth, and, you know, it doesn't matter. And in the end, what matters is you do what you can. You do your best. And so
right.
I've never given up on a student. And I, you know, even if they, and I fight for them when they're going to get kicked out of our school.
Mm.
And then if they do anyway, if I, you know, fall short in trying to hold on to them, I don't, you know, it's not the end of it. I mean, I told
right.
this boy whose father was adamant about getting him vaccinated, and said, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I appreciate, you know, that you care about my son, but, you know, I'm not going to do it. Now he may change, but anyway, I said to him, well, you know, look, Luis has my phone number. So it's not like, you know, I'll still help him if he needs anything. When he's applying to college, I'll still write a recommendation. I mean,
right.
you know, the relationship doesn't end there. And, you know, you don't give up on him, and you don't,
right.
you know, you don't necessarily, you're not necessarily done with him. Most students, when they leave, they're done with you, and that's great. You know, they
right.
move on, and that's great. And, but, you know, if they're not ready to, you know, if they need something, you know, you could be there for them. So that's something I learned from my parents. I've never given up on a student, even when they give up on themselves, and it works. It works. Sometimes
right.
when they've given up on themselves, if you haven't, it matters.
Right. And I think I remember you being there for the kids, like all the kids would come to you for, you know, advice and whatnot. And, you know, they looked up to you as not only a teacher,
yeah.
but
I mean,
an inspiration.
Me and a lot of, and I'm not the only one, fortunately. I mean,
okay,
I'm not, every kid doesn't connect with every teacher, but yeah, hopefully at a school, hopefully you have some teachers who kids feel comfortable with.
Right.
Either opening up to, or just, you know, just being silly with, and just connecting with. I was just talking to a kid today. We're working on his essay for college, and, you know, he has, you know, he sadly, his dad, his mother and father broke up, and his father kind of, you know, took himself out of his life. And, you know, and now he's back in his life, but, you know, it's kind of awkward. And I was saying to him, you know, one of the tragedies and one of the great challenges of being a parent is when your kids become teenagers, it's easy to believe they don't want anything to do with you, because they act that way
right.
a lot.
Right.
And, you know, it's
right.
part of the growing up process that they want to become their own person. But the problem is if you believe it, you know, and if the parent turns away and says, okay, you don't want anything to do with me, you know, I'm going to leave you alone. I'm not going to have anything to do with you. I don't want to bother you. I don't want to be constantly told,
right.
you know, get out of my room, okay. get away. But
you know when to step away.
But I think what you do is, you know, yeah, you give them space. But you never
right.
stop. You never stop. You never
right.
give
no,
up
exactly.
on communicating
right.
because they need to know that you're trying. That's the thing. Like
right.
they mm. need to push you away. But if you
mm.
walk away and there's no push and they're not pushing you away, that doesn't feel good to them. They feel hurt and abandoned, even though you think
right.
they don't care. And you know, how are people supposed to even know that? Like, I know that because I mean, I know it partly from my own mistakes as a parent, but I also know it from working with teenagers. I mean, I've had
right.
the benefit of that. How are you supposed to know that stuff as a parent? You know, you have these kids when they're little, they look up to you, they want to be around you, and then all of a sudden everything just changes. They become this other person. And, you know, how are you supposed to know how to respond to that? You know,
right. Now,
really
do they know that you're Charlotte Ray's son? And have you ever told them do they even know who Charlotte Ray is? Because these kids today, you know, don't know facts of life. You know what I'm saying? These kids don't watch TV anymore.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. No, they don't. Well, no, they're right. Their frame of reference is very different. I mean,
right.
we were just today, as I said, we were reading The Great Gatsby. Reading The Glass Menagerie, and there's a reference to Garbo, and of course I had to explain to them who Garbo is. Of course,
Garbo,
that's a few generations before my mom.
Right.
But no, you know, I made a point. I've always made a point, you know, not to, you know, that I don't just tell people who my mother is. It's not, you know, it's not who I am. I mean, it is who I am, but it's not.
Of course,
you know,
not. Hey, I'm Larry Strauss. I'm Charlotte Ray's son. How are you? Sit down.
I used to hate when people called me Larry Ray, you know, although it's perfectly understandable. Like, if somebody doesn't know my name, how are they supposed to know, you know? But, sorry, I have to drink some water.
I'm going to take a drink.
When I started teaching, I think it would have been a little bit of a distraction because then, back in the 90s, the kids would have known who she was. And I never said anything.
Yeah.
I never said anything publicly, but, you know, I had one student who I kind of mentored. He was a guy trying to get out of the gang life, and we became very close. And in fact, he's probably the person who I didn't give up on the most. who I many times thought this guy is. I don't know if he can ever change, but I didn't. But I just said, you know what? I'm just gonna keep believing in him. And you know, and he did, and he's a father now. He's, you know, with his kids.
Nice.
He's got a good job. He's got a government security clearance, despite all the crimes he committed as a minor and was incarcerated for. He's a completely different person, and actually was a mentor to some of my. I was a basketball coach, and he was his assistant coach, and became a really powerful presence in the lives of a lot of these kids. But when he was a few years out of high school, you know, we used to see each other. We'd talk a lot on the phone, and he was going through some stuff, needed to talk to me, and so I was busy. I was actually going to take my brother to. Out to dinner. My brother by then was in a facility, and we'd go a few times, take him out to dinner, take him for ice cream, take him shopping for stuff to have in his room. And so I just said to the guy, why don't you just come with me for the drive? It's like an hour drive. So we went so we could talk. And then we did it. We planned to do it again. And that time my mother really wanted to go. She hadn't seen my brother for a while, and she asked to go. And so I said, well, fine, you know, sure. I mean, you know, my student and I, you know, we can talk, you know, later. She's like, I'm going to sleep in the car anyway. You know, you guys can talk.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, we pull up to this kid's house in South L.A., or his apartment building, and, you know, he comes out, and he gets in the car. And I introduce this to my mom, and he says, hi, very nice to meet you, you know, very, very honored to meet you. And he's meeting my mother, you know, and then he sat in the back, and he sits in the front, and then he turns and he looks at me like, what? Am I in a hallucination? Mrs. Garrett is in the backseat of the car. You know, I mean, he didn't say anything in front of her because he was embarrassed, but, you know, later he's like, your mom is, you know, so that's how it's been. Like, people have found out, but never as an announcer. When my mother's book came out, and there was a lot of press, and so there were photographs. If you did an internet search on me, well, still to this day, you're likely to see at least some pictures of the two of us together. And then, of course, if you read the caption, you'll see, you know. And if you look, I think if you look me up on the internet, it'll connect you. You know.
What was her book? Her book was My Facts of Life or something.
The Facts of My Life.
The Facts of My Life. Pardon me.
I thought it was very clever. No.
Yeah, definitely.
And You know, so like I had a few years ago, a student of mine said to me, your mom was an actress, right? Your mom was on television, right? I said, oh, yeah. How'd you know? He said, well, I was looking at you. I was telling my grandma about you and how I liked your class and then, you know, and that you're a writer and that you have books. And then I was going to show her some of your books. And then we looked on the internet and then she said, Charlotte, right? So the grandmother knew.
Right, right.
But, you know, he wouldn't have known. So the kids have not, I mean, they're, you know, it's my son, who's now 21, there was a girl in his class who was obsessed with the Facts of Life. She'd seen it on some cable station or something, you know, and really wanted to meet my mom. So there are these outliers of this Gen Z or whatever
right.
it is, but
right.
But no, for the most part, you know, it's kind of old for them.
Yeah. Well, the reason I asked, one of the reasons I asked is because, you know, you do give these kids a lot of advice, and I'm wondering if some of them ever said, oh, here's this guy, grew up with an affluent life, with his mom is a big actress, and he's giving me advice, and he doesn't know what I go through every day, but when you're a human being, it doesn't matter. Is what I was going to say.
Well,
yeah.
Right. First of all, my mother didn't become a TV star. We didn't become affluent until I was already an adult in the late 80s. Prior to that, we were certainly comfortably
right.
middle class. But
no, I just meant
but
you,
I
know,
didn't,
you were a celebrity son. That's all.
Right. No, I know. But I mean, I think they know, like I grew up in New York City in the 1970s and, you know, we lived in a building. It was a very nice building, but did not have a doorman. You know, we had people getting mugged in the building. We were, I rode the subway to school every day. It wasn't like we didn't live on the East Side. My parents, at some of the time, you know, they had very good years, and then they had some lean years, and, you know, they were artists, and so they never wanted to extend themselves financially and make themselves vulnerable to the whims of the business. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I remember when we actually left New York because my mother wasn't getting any work in the theater anymore. And her friends sort of said, you know, Charles Nelson Reilly and Paul Lynde, their friends, said, you got to come out to L.A. And, of course, they were right. You know, there was a lot of shows wanted her. You know, she did a bunch of episodes, came out, you know, just to see. And she did on, like, Love American Style and The Partridge Family and All in the Family. Mm-hmm. And she did a bunch of shows. And then, you know, we moved out. But when we moved out, right before we moved out, our building on 106th Street, went co-op or condo, and they had a chance to buy the apartment for $68,000, and, you know, they said they were scared to even take out a mortgage for that much, which even in 1974 was still an incredible
Larry there?
Bargain
there, you?
For a New York apartment. I'm not hearing you. Hi.
I can't hear what the woman said. Did you guys hear that? All right. I don't know. Let's see if we get Larry on the phone. Hang on. I don't know if you guys can hear me. If you can, I apologize. I've got disconnected from the platform, and we lost Larry. So when I lost Larry, that's when everything went off.
Hello?
So let's see. Larry.
Hi. I'm back. Hi. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Me neither. We got disconnected.
Sorry.
No, I don't think it was you because I don't think it was you because before I went on the air, I had, signed into my platform here, and I put a store, and all of a sudden it got disconnected, and I just bought new equipment.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Hey, I think I'm back. Let me see if I get Larry back on the phone and see what happens. We'll try one more time.
Hi.
Hey, I don't know what's going on, hon. I apologize. I have no idea. I can't explain it.
It seems like our call is still connected for a while, and then, but I'm not hearing you, and then it hangs up. Then it says,
yeah, I don't. You're gone immediately. Okay, so if we keep getting knocked off, let's jump ahead because I want everybody to know about your new book, Light Man. Tell us about Light Man.
Well, it's inspired in some strange way by my childhood, growing up in New York in the coming of age in the 70s, actress mother. Severely developmentally disabled brother. And it's a story that I've been trying to write since I started writing almost, and I've written it many different ways. I think I finally succeeded though, but it's so different. The protagonist is not even a member of my family. He's a character who just appeared in one of the versions of it. But it's like he sees this family through his eyes, although he also has a life of its own. It's ended up being a story about friendship, about two guys trying to find their way in the world, about men fighting against the obsolescence that they sometimes feel in a world that's changing, and that they're not prepared, as many men aren't prepared to go with the change, to roll with the punches, and it's sort of wildly humorous, but also I think very poignant look just at people trying to make it in the world, and.
It's somewhat true to life, then, from your experience back then, a little bit. No?
Yeah, I mean, for example, the one of the characters, this guy named Mike, he's a light man. That's where the title comes from. He's a brilliant guy, not very educated, but a brilliant guy who can mechanically fix anything. He can fix your toaster. Fix your TV, your radio, but he can't fix his broken son, and it's killing him. He has this mentally disabled son who is afraid of garbage trucks and afraid of loud noises, and then sometimes just inexplicably, freaks out and is biting and scratching himself in public. But this man is determined to help his son, to fix his son. And when the novel opens, he's in the park with both of his boys, and the son, loses it. And he pulls out this baseball cap that he's rigged with all these little pieces of colored plastic so that they reflect the sunlight, and it calms him down. Like, he's figured that out, how to calm his son down. And this other man, the protagonist, the narrator of the story, Al, sees this, and he's inspired by it. He's this sort of lost young man who's come back from Vietnam and has no family. He's left an abusive family. And he's doing okay, but he sees this guy, and he realizes, like, this to him, that's what you do in the world. That's how you make yourself something, is taking care of a kid like that, figuring that out. And he's inspired by it. And he goes out and he ends up finding this guy on the street at night outside the theater. The guy Mike is, as I say, he's a brilliant light man, but he can't get in the theater. The union won't let him work until he does an apprenticeship and all these other things. And so he's just sort of bitterly out on the street running the spotlights that, you know, that for an opening night or for, you know, a gala. And he's this invisible guy smoking a cigarette, making sure the light stays on. And Al works for a photo shop, so he's passing out coupons at night, trying to get people's business into this, into this, to come through their photo processing. Mm. And yeah, they forge this friendship, this unlikely friendship, out on the street at night. And in some ways, they become the best thing for each other, and then in other ways, they become the worst thing for each other.
Don't give too much away. Don't give.
All right. I won't.
We want them to read it. We want them to read it.
Yeah, there was a lot of unexpectedness.
It sounds sad.
It has its moments, but you know, always with the humor. The humor saves it, I think. I hope.
Well, do you fancy yourself to be a comedy writer, or just that you write anything that comes out of you?
I've written comedy, but I just don't laughter. And I guess because in my childhood, the only way I could really, or the best way I could connect with my brother was to make him laugh. Yeah. You know, he would stare at a clock or at the light coming through the window and ignore all the people. But if I could get him to laugh, he'd pay attention and he'd get excited. Yeah. And so that became certainly in teaching, humor is everything. The kids are so tired of being bored. They're so bored. They're so tired of it. And, you know, if you can get them to laugh, they open, you know, there's an opening up of the mind and you can reach them much, much easier.
Now,
so, and then the same thing in writing for me, I like to read things that are funny. And so, but you know, the challenge is, can you tell a sad story with humor? Can you tell I'm not as interested in just comedy for the sake of comedy.
Right.
Although, you know, I love great stand-up comedians, don't get me wrong, and I watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he's a genius. I love how he figures out, you know,
I've never seen it, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's probably not for everyone, but it's definitely for me. And
he's so funny,
he pushes things pretty far. But I've never felt like he's gone over, and then that's the whole point, is his characters always goes too far anyway, so he kind of gets away with it. I think ultimately though it's a hopeful story. I think it's a very hopeful story.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, and I'm excited. The characters to me just really come alive in their situations. You know, I've always been somebody, probably to my detriment commercially, I'm not interested in writing about people who are rich or famous or at the top of anything. Like, that does not interest me. I know, a lot of people read and watch TV, you know, in what they call aspirational. They want to see how people live. You know, they want to see the lives that they wish they had, think they wish they had. But I've never been interested in that. I'm interested in ordinary people and the real struggles and the magic, like the extraordinary moments, the extraordinary. And that I think I've managed to find the extraordinariness in this story. The moments, the scenes, the characters, just the unexpected. I mean, even the there's a dog in the book. I'm afraid sometimes that he steals the show, like that he may be the most sympathetic character.
They usually are.
But it's right. That's true. But you know, it isn't just that he's Yeah, he's an extension of Al, of the narrator. The narrator, it's his girlfriend's dog, and the narrator's always walking this really, real love-hate relationship,
yeah.
You know,
now,
competition and all the rest, yeah.
You've written, what, about, I think, 4 or 5 books, right?
This is my 5th novel. Yeah, I've written nonfiction, too. I've written
we lost you there? Larry? Now, I know I didn't drop you because you're still here. I still have your number there.
Hello?
There you go. You broke up.
Oh, okay. This is my 5th novel, and I've also written some nonfiction. The last one was a book about, actually it's a book about teaching. Mostly columns that I wrote. I write for USA Today, columns mostly on education, and I also, I used to write for Huffington Post, so I have a collection of those. And
nice.
Some other nonfiction. I've written about sports and other stuff. But this is my 5th novel.
Any of your books ever been on, or have you considered doing a book on how to get through to someone who is disabled, like your brother?
I have not, but I
you know, the story of your life with your brother, you know?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting. I'm working on a memoir just about.
Cool.
Mostly it centers around my relationship with my father, but it definitely is gonna, you know, it's gonna deal with my relationship with my brother too.
Of course, yeah.
Some of what we've been through. You know,
well, yeah,
family.
If it's your memoir, yep. If it's your memoir, it's life. So
I mean,
yeah.
I had an interesting relationship with my brother. He was 3.5 years older than me, and you know, he's sort of this tragic figure in my parents' lives. But to me, as the younger brother, I always felt like, you know, he was special, not in the euphemistic way that we use that term, but that I thought he was special in a good way.
Right.
He was, you know, because he seemed immune to the pain that I felt as a child. He seemed oblivious to the hurt. You know, I remember when people at the park would point and laugh at him, and it was humiliating to me, but to him, it didn't matter. It didn't mean anything. Mm. So to me, he was this strength. He had this incredible strength. And also his self-reliance that he could. Also, you know, when he would talk to a clock or a mop or something, as a little kid, I thought they were talking back to him. I mean, I thought he had a magical power relationship with these other things.
Right.
And
right.
You know, so that's something in the story. I mean, there is a character in the story who's based on me, a little boy. He's not really a prominent character in the story. You only see him a few times, but I, you know, that element is in there that, you know, he believes his brother from another planet, and that
he's magical,
and he's magical, and that's a much better planet than ours. And he thinks they're going to fix the spaceship that he crashed on, and he wants to go back with his brother.
Oh wow!
You know? And Al, the protagonist, Al's talking to him about it. They're talking about it while, you know, the kid's petting Al's dog. Because the Mike, the light man, and his family, they can't have a dog because his boy, Davey, is afraid of dogs. But the other kid, Jonathan, really, he likes the dog. But anyway, he's petting him, and they're talking, and he's telling him about Davey's planet and how we're going to go back. And, you know, and Al's listening, and he's thinking, like, you know, you sure, he's thinking, I don't think the parents go to some other planet. Like, he's trying to process this, but he's like, you know, it's incredible. And then at a certain point, he starts, at first, you know, he just knows it's like just a kid being a kid. But then, he starts to wonder, maybe there is another planet. Like, maybe I'm not from this planet. You know, maybe Rudy, his girlfriend, from this planet either. You know, is that something, you know, sometimes we feel the same way people feel, like, what am I doing in this family? Like, am I really part of this family? You know, you know, I've known people who feel that way. Like, are you sure I wasn't like adopted or, you know, that you didn't think the wrong
exactly.
person? And, but in some ways, sometimes we feel like we're in the wrong planet, you know, or, you know, we're in the wrong time. We're in the wrong, something's not right about us. We're not clicking with the moment with our existence.
Right. Well, we always question ourselves from the moment we can start to think. I think we question ourselves, you know? So even in adulthood, we question ourselves.
That's what it is to be human. Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
But, well, where can everybody get Light Man and your other books, too?
Well, it's certainly anywhere where you could buy books, particularly online.
Yeah.
And, I know the ebook's available now. I'm not sure. I think you could pre-order a copy, which I appreciate anyone who does. Also any of your listeners who have a book club and are looking for an interesting book to read and talk about, and possibly, if they would like, have a virtual visit from the author. I am happy to do that. I could be reached.
Oh, that's cool.
Through Twitter. Most people, I know whenever I write a column that somebody objects to, they somehow find a way to email me or send me a message.
Yeah, they can always find you that way.
Yeah, so I think I can be found. But anyway, I'm happy. Anybody who ever writes to me and says, I have a book club, you know, I'd like, you know, if you would visit us virtually. I mean, obviously, I would consider visiting in person. But yeah, I'm happy to do that. I know it's nice, you know, it's nice sometimes to ask a writer, what the hell were you thinking?
Right.
Or anything, or just, you know, find out a little bit about the person.
No, but
so,
that's cool that you do
I,
that because not many I people
do
would
that.
Do that. I mean, you think Stephen King or anybody else would say, "Oh, if you buy my book and you have a book club,
hit me up and I'll
join you."
Stephen King doesn't have to do that. One,
no,
number
I'm just
two,
saying, I'm,
he
I'm
wouldn't
just
have
saying,
enough time I, in the day. But yeah, no, I appreciate
I
that.
I haven't heard of any authors doing that. I have not heard of one author to do that, and I've had a lot of authors on this show, and I've never heard any of them offer that, and that is fabulous. So,
well, they should.
They should. Yeah.
Do
you have a website, Larry?
Oh, no, I don't have a website. You can find everything you need, though, on, you know, if anybody does a search of me. I'm on Twitter and then, you know, I write for the USA Today.
There you go.
And usually people, just DM me on Twitter if they want to.
There you go. Very cool. Well, Larry, I thank you so much for hanging in with me tonight, even with the technical difficulties. I appreciate that so much.
Not a problem. Not a problem. By the way, for all your listeners, you know, I'm in LA. Just so you know, I've been driving the whole time.
I know. I was going to ask you earlier who the hell you were racing.
It sounded
like you were in a race before. I'm like, who's he racing?
No, unfortunately, I'm not going very fast. No, that was somebody on a motorcycle going by me. No, you know, I've been helping kids get through their college applications late, so I've been working late, and I timed it so I get in the car in time to talk to you and your listeners, and always fun sharing my drive with other people.
Well, Larry, we need more teachers like you, that is for sure, and definitely more authors too. And I would love. Is this going to be an audio by any chance, Light Man?
Oh, hopefully, yeah, yeah. I have not worked that out with the publisher yet, whether or when we're going to do that. But yeah, I hope so.
Yeah,
because
reading is not something I have time for. Listening to something or watching something I have the easiest chance of doing.
Right.
So,
it is easier, sure.
Yeah, but, oh, my goodness. Thanks again for coming back. It was great catching up with you. I'm so glad that we could catch up. And a happy Thanksgiving to you. And guys, go check out Lightman and any other books of Larry's. They're available all online. Obviously, remember, you can buy books online. And if you want to send a nasty letter, I'm kidding, to Larry, you can find
I love him.
Well, you can find him at USA Today newspaper, and you don't do Huffington Post anymore, you said, right?
And on Twitter. No, I haven't written
Twitter.
For Huffington Post in
right.
years.
And Twitter, yeah. That's Larry Strauss, Strauss. And the new book is called Lightman. Go check it out. Larry, I thank you so much, and be careful getting home. And what a pleasure to hang out with you again tonight. And
thank you. Anytime.
All the best to you. All right, you take care. All right, bye-bye, everybody.
Right.
Larry Strauss.
Bye.
Thank you, Larry. Take care. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks.
Okay,
you too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, hon. Oh, boy. Yeah, Larry was on, oh, my goodness, I don't even know when. It was a long time ago. We talked a lot about, of course, his mother, Charlotte Ray at the time. But, you know, he's his own person. So, you know, and you can only talk so much about Charlotte Ray when we're talking to Larry. And that's not cool. We're talking about him and his book. So, and the new book, again, is Light Man. And it sounds like a great story. I really wish I had time to read because I would. And the fact that I can't see so well doesn't help the situation either. So, but anyway, yeah, so the book sounds great, and he's got four others out there. And, man, what a teacher. It's right now, it is 9:52 on the East Coast, so it's, 3 hours back? 6:52 for him. No, 9, 10, 9, 8. It's 8:50. I don't know what the hell time it is. Anyway, 3 hours behind. He's in L.A. It's 10 p.m. Eastern here, and he's out helping kids do their college applications in the inner city. How cool is that? And that's why I asked him to, like, you know, do people, you know, sometimes question his advice, because, you know, he did not grow up in the inner city per se. He did grow up in New York and not affluent, but, you know, his mom was a celebrity. And, you know, sometimes people are like, well, you don't know me. I have nothing. You had something, you know, whatever. But, you know, when you're a human being and you care and you have empathy, and it doesn't matter what your background is, you can help anybody. So be kind, people. That's it. Be kind to each other, really. I mean, we need more of that for sure. But it was great catching up with him. And it's been a long time. He came on when the pandemic first started, when everybody was told to stay home, and he was trying to do, you know, the remote teaching. And, you know, with kids that are coming from inner city, that's kind of hard to do, especially inner city, where a lot of parents send their kids to school because they got to go to work and they can't stay home with the kids and help them learn online. A lot of the kids suffered. It's horrible during the pandemic, you know, but unfortunately, parents, to survive, they had to go to work. So if they were able to go to work, put it that way. So thank you again, Larry. Great to talk to you tonight. Thank you so much. Everybody, check out the new book, Light Man, L-I-G-H-T Man, available online everywhere by Larry Strauss, Strauss. So guess what? I don't have anything going on for you guys until the 30th. And I'm only going to book something if it's something that I really feel needs to get on the air, because we've got Thanksgiving next week. And yeah, I could use a break. How about you? I could use a break. So, yeah, the 19th, I had some events booked that I was supposed to attend, and unfortunately I can't make them. So, so I had blocked those days out, and I never rebooked them. But I never know when I can make something. It depends on my body, if I could get it out the door. So anyway, yeah, on the 30th, it's going to be really great. We've got Lisa Penagos joining us. She was on with me before I started the show. It's so funny. I'll never forget it, too. I think I was at my friend's mom's funeral, believe it or not, and somebody asked me what I was up to, and I said, oh, nothing. I said, I'm thinking about starting a radio show. And then I saw this posting somebody put on. They were looking for a co-host. So I joined this show. It was a couple months, maybe 5-6 months. I decided that this is the way I wanted that show to go, but that wasn't the way it was going, and it wasn't my show to change. So I decided to do my own, and I pretty much said this is what I wanted to do. So I did. So I did it before the pandemic, and then during the pandemic, everybody and their mother comes out with a podcast. And then you got all these people with the podcast now who are celebrities. So who are you going to listen to, a celebrity or somebody you never heard of, right? So anyway, but we haven't faded. We're still doing very well. So I'm happy about that. Thrilled. I can't even tell you how thrilled, and I'm grateful and thankful to you guys. So I appreciate that for you listening all this time when there are a million of podcasts out there, maybe more that you could be listening to. But guess what? You're hanging out with me, and how cool is that? Thank you so much. I appreciate it. So a happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Hopefully this year's Thanksgiving will be to your liking. I shouldn't say better, to your liking. Some people enjoyed not having a ton of company at Thanksgiving. So, you know, now that the pandemic is somewhat curtailed to some degree, we can now get together, especially if we're all vaccinated. You know, you're spending time with family again. So, but again, some people enjoyed not doing that. So my hand is like, I'm like raising it and putting it down. So anyway, so Thanksgiving, do what you will with that. But remember, every day should be Thanksgiving, because we should be grateful for everything we have, whether we have very little. Remember, you have a lot more than somebody else. So you could be a lot worse off. So that's what keeps me going in my life, my whole life. So, you know, always think about the fact that people have it a lot worse than you, and you'll be okay. So have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you to Larry Strauss. Go check out his book, Light Man, and be kind, everybody. Take care. Have a good night. Happy Thanksgiving. Gobble, 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 gobble.
Get a winner.
everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. Take care. Bye-bye.